G'day, this is Hamish McTaggart from Bidjamaya Station, and this is the Country Hour on the ABC.
Hello there, great to have you along this Thursday afternoon. Belinda Varaschetti with you here on ABC WA. That is right, this is the Country Hour, checking in with headlines for you at 12:30 and also a look at the weather around Western Australia. And then heading to the north of the state where local fruit growers are concerned about citrus canker. We've been talking about it last week or so in the Northern Territory. And there's an action group now formed about dealing with it in the Northern Territory, but concern about whether or not it's crossed the border into Western Australia. Talking about that with you after the news headlines today at 12:30. But the big news today is around the live export industry and the federal government's short, sharp review into the live sheep trade is now out. Its main recommendation is for a significant reduction in sheep numbers on ships bound for the Middle East during the northern summer period. So that's now. The Agriculture Minister, David Littleproud, has accepted all 23 recommendations of the investigation that was launched after footage emerged of dead and dying sheep on a vessel last year. Sheep numbers will be reduced by up to almost 30%. Penalties for breaches will rise and inspectors will travel on all ships. You can be part of the conversation today as we talk to a number of the different players in the industry, and you can text through this afternoon here on the Country Hour. That text number is 0448 922 604. Kicking off, firstly with the Minister today, this is David Littleproud, who says the changes will help the industry remain viable.
Today I announce there will be no ban to the live trade sheep in the Middle East in summer. However, as a result of this review, we will be making serious and meaningful change to the industry. A major recommendation which will be adopted for this year's summer trade will be the allometric stocking density model. This means an increase in space for sheep of up to 39%, resulting in a stocking reduction of up to 28%. Additionally, in a sweeping change, Dr. McCarthy recommended a seismic shift from stocking density based on animal mortality to one based on animal welfare. The greatest contributor to animal mortality on boats in the Middle East in summer is heat stress. Dr. McCarthy has created a new model that goes towards addressing this using the probability of sheep enduring heat stress systems and issues of ventilation and airflow on boats. This model could have the potential merit of giving exporters incentive to improve ventilation and airflow to increase their carrying capacity. In short, it could encourage exporters to upgrade their boats. However, we don't have audited ventilation scores for boats, and there needs to be more work and consultation on the number of animals enduring heat stress symptoms, as Dr. McCarthy himself says. The heat stress model he recommends would potentially dictate stocking density reductions of between 19 to 79%. Given the significant variance of approximately 60% in the system, further modelling and consultation would be required before any adoption. Another key recommendation the government will implement immediately is that the independent regulator will investigate any voyage which has a mortality rate of 1% or greater. I announced today this will be extended across all sheep voyages all of the time. That's the McCarthy review, but I want to go further. In coming weeks, I will introduce a bill to amend the Australian Meat and Livestock Industry Act 1997 to create a new offence to punish those who seek to profit from breaking export rules, including around stocking densities and poor animal welfare practices.
That is the Federal Agriculture Minister, David Littleproud. ABC WA 12:09. Labor's Joel Fitzgibbon says the government isn't going far enough. He says the changes announced today are a political fix and they're designed to kick the problem down the road. And what he wants is the industry phased out altogether. How do you feel? How are you seeing it? These recommendations out of this review today, you can be part of the conversation.
Have your say on the Country Hour. SMS the program on 0448 922 604.
Not too far away now, and getting response from the State Agriculture Minister Alana McTiernan to the McCarthy Review recommendations, and also Nick Dawes, the Director of Emmanuel Exports, the live export company based here in Western Australia, here in Fremantle, also not too far away on the Country Hour, 10 past 12. Charles Caldwell is a sheep farmer at Boyart Brook. He welcomes the review and the recommendations because he hopes industry can now move forward just with a bit more certainty. But he's not optimistic about the long-term future of live exports.
I was pretty much expecting something similar and along the lines of what's come out today. And that's... That gives us something to go forward with, hopefully. Hopefully it's still economic for the exporters to stay in business at these levels. And, might mean that sheep are hopefully going to be good.
And I guess these changes are going to have to come out of somebody's hip pocket. I'm guessing it's going to be the farmers?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it comes back to the farmer takes the price. Well, the exporters are getting the same price when they deliver it. So if there's additional costs to get it there, well, that's going to come out of the price they can afford to pay farmers. It's the same, if there's lots of sheep going to the abattoirs, well, they've got surplus of supply, well, they won't have to pay as much as they do now.
Do you see it as sort of, a short-term bit of pain for an overall better system?
I think short-term it's a good thing if it can get us back on track short-term, but I don't see... any future in it, given I think there's a high likelihood of a Labor government coming in, and the current policy from Bill Shorten is to phase it out. So if that's their policy and they win government, well, and there's a pretty good chance they will, we've had these guys in for two terms, so there's not much, looking forward, it's pretty scary, very scary.
Sheep farmer at Boyart Brook, Charles Caldwell, and also talking to Bindi Murray. She's a sheep producer from Wood and Nilling, running about 15,000 sheep. She's also a director of Sheep Producers Australia, catching up with her in a few moments' time, just before news headlines at 12:30. Meantime, State Agriculture Minister Alana McTiernan says the McCarthy Review does offer some improvements to the trade, but it doesn't go far enough. And she warns she may be forced to use state law to stop exports if improvements aren't made.
Look, I am deeply concerned. The sheep farmers in Western Australia do rely on the live export industry to a considerable extent. Now, this report in the long run is not going to help them. This report is not doing enough to restore public confidence in this trade. We know that the high heat and humidity in the Middle East, particularly during the months of July and August, is such that we see mass sheep mortality incidents. We should have been dealing with this. We think this is strategically a very poor response. Under our Animal Welfare Act, we have an obligation to take preventative action if we believe an act of cruelty is about to occur to an animal. And it may well be then that we have the obligation, if we think that these sheep are being sent into the Middle East at a time and in circumstances that aren't going to deal with that real heat stress issue, that we may have to take action to place a pause during those months.
WA Agriculture Minister Alana McTiernan saying she might step in and call on state laws, state animal welfare laws, to pause the sheep trade to the Middle East if her department is concerned that the welfare of the sheep on these journeys during this period is at risk. What do you think about that? 0448 922 604 to be part of the conversation. Peter at Narrogin says, good to hear sensible and practical measures to ensure welfare is guaranteed for live sheep export. Any export company not complying should be punished, not the farmers. Thanks for that, Peter, in Narrogin. Well, the live export company at the centre of the latest debate over the future of the trade is Emmanuel Exports, based here in Fremantle. And when footage went to air on television showing the conditions on board the sheep shipments to the Middle East, the Federal Minister for Agriculture was not impressed with what he saw. And on one voyage in particular, 2,400 sheep died on board the Awassi Express during hot and humid conditions in the region in that voyage last year. Now, the incident triggered the McCarthy review into the trade and those recommendations being released today. Nick Dawes is the Director of Emmanuel Exports. Nick Dawes, what's your response to the review's recommendations?
Well, no, Emmanuel's welcomes the recommendations of the McCarthy review, and we look forward to working with the regulator to implement these significant changes.
So what in particular jumps out at you? I mean, I suppose there was that idea of there could be a suspension of the trade. That has been ruled out by the Federal Agriculture Minister today. But can you deal with all the other recommendations within that, particularly looking at the stocking densities, because they have been dramatically reduced up to around 30%. What impact is that going to have on the bottom line of a company like yours? I mean, is it still going to be economically viable to proceed with it?
Well, the stocking densities have already been reduced during the summer, and Emmanuel's has committed to reducing by at least 17.5%. Obviously, up to 39 is a lot more than what we had anticipated, but new technology and ventilation, shipping, and better sort of scientific about welfare will, you know, guide the trade going forward. But obviously, the numbers that will be exported to our customers will be down significantly.
So what does that do? I mean, at what point does it become unviable? The minister saying that reducing the stock density by up to 28% during that Middle Eastern summer, what does that do to the economics of running a business?
Well, obviously, what we'll have to do, we haven't had a chance to talk to our customers about this, so things will come to light once we've done that.
Okay. But you had hoped that perhaps that stocking density wouldn't have been as significant as it's been announced today?
Oh, no, it's scientifically based, so Emmanuel's, you know, we welcome the recommendation and we look forward to implementing it with the regulator.
What about the incentives to improve the ships and your plans, Emmanuel's plans to improve the ships or look for new ships into the future?
I think it has been clear, Emmanuel's doesn't own or operate any vessels, but as, you know, shipping infrastructure is renewed and investments made in new technology, there will be greater welfare safeguards in place, and going by the new stocking density model, you know, scope to carry more sheep. This is just another good example of good welfare is good business.
But does it make you start looking around at other ships or even buying your own ships into the future?
Well, our customer has actually invested $110 million in a new vessel, which will be available beginning of next year.
Okay, so that's one ship. Is that enough,
yes,
to complete all your journeys, or you'll still be using some of the current ones, like the Awassi Express, for example?
So the Awassi Express is a vessel that sort of is chartered by other exporters, but our main vessels at this current time is the Al Shawaik and the Al Masila.
Within, and all these responses are just coming in, Nick Dawes, but the Federal Agriculture Department response to the recommendations today has gone really honed in on some of the ships that are currently working today. And one of them includes a phase out or a banning of double-tiered vessels. I think the date is around 2019, sometime in 2019. Can your company accommodate that?
Well, one of our vessels is a double-tiered vessel, but obviously the phase-out will be January, and obviously that's when the new vessel is being commissioned and will come online.
What about your response to amend the bill? This is an announcement by Federal Agriculture Minister David Littleproud to increase the penalties associated with any company or any individual found to be breaching any of these laws. If we just go through some of the details, a director of a company could face 10 years prison or $2.1 million fine. An individual convicted could face 10 years and a $420,000 fine, and a company a fine of $4.2 million, three times the benefit gained, or 10% of the company's annual turnover, whichever is greater. What message does that send?
Well, I'll just sort of say that, Linda, that I and Emmanuel's, we support any measures that will strengthen accountability and transparency in our industry.
So there's significant penalties. Does it make you have a really hard look at yourself? I mean, nobody wants to go to jail over something like this.
No, Emmanuel's has confidence in what it does. So, you know, we're just happy that we can strengthen accountability and transparency.
What's this process been like for, well, you personally and the company over the last few weeks while this review has been gone on, obviously triggered by what happened on the Awassi Express, well, the footage that was shown on television going back a few weeks now?
Obviously, you know, I and everyone here at Emmanuel's was extremely distressed by that footage, and we all agree that it's completely unacceptable. No, there's been sort of heightened tensions throughout the industry about how the government will react, but obviously the McCarthy review has been done and has 23 recommendations, and you know, I just look forward to working with the regulator to implement them.
We've heard from the State Agriculture Minister today, Alana McTiernan, just moments ago, saying that, you know, she doesn't think this McCarthy review goes far enough, and she says she can call on state laws, state animal welfare laws, if her department, herself or the department, believes that animal welfare is at risk on these voyages to the Middle East, and she'll call on those laws to suspend or pause some of those shipments. What is your response to that?
Well, obviously, respect the Minister's interest in the trade, and I'd also like to thank the Premier McGowan for his ongoing support for reform and sustainability of the trade. But any sort of disruption for a period of time to the trade will evidently lead to the end of the trade, because the customers need a continual supply of live sheep.
How do you think the State Minister's handled the debate surrounding the future of the live trade?
The Minister's has her opinion, and obviously that's different to what industry believes, and you know, she can think what she likes.
Have you had discussions with her?
No, I haven't had any discussions with Alana, but would welcome them.
What have your customers been saying? Obviously they're aware of what's been going on, the debates surrounding this, and waiting on the outcome of this review. What messages are you getting back?
Well, the major thing that we're sort of hearing back from our customers, but not only our customers, but obviously the countries they're from, is the issue that food security for them, that there could be disruption to food security for their countries.
And what message do you have for producers today here in Western Australia who have been expressing their concerns about the future of this trade for some time now while this debate has gone on?
Well, I just would like to say that to all the producers is that Emmanuel's is 100% committed to implement these new recommendations, and we... Emmanuel's really wishes to regain its trust with the community and the producers, to give them the confidence that live sheep that Emmanuel's exports is done in the best possible way.
So how much damage do you think has been done? I mean, getting that trust back, it's going to be a difficult process.
Of course it'll be a difficult process, but we are committed to doing that.
And despite the recommendations today, with the significant reduction in those stocking densities on the ships up to 28% during those Middle Eastern summer, you're confident that the industry has a long future here in WA?
No, I definitely do, yes.
Nick Dawes, thanks so much for your time today on The Country Hour.
Well, thank you, Belinda.
This is The Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Local Radio WA.
23 past 12, Nick Dawes, who's the Director of Emmanuel Exports, and responding to the McCarthy Review, the 23 recommendations handed down today. This is the review into the live sheep trade to the Middle East during the Northern Hemisphere summer, and the key recommendation being reducing stocking densities by up to 28%, and this change will affect shipments during the Middle Eastern summer this year, so as of now. Checking in with news headlines shortly, but continuing to get responses on the McCarthy Review this afternoon. The RSPCA's chief scientist is Dr. Bitta Jones, and she's very disappointed with the recommendations in the review.
Once again, the economics of the live export industry have trumped animal welfare. The Australian public will be absolutely gutted by the response by the McCarthy Review and the Minister's response. His decision not to end the live export of sheep during May to October will do nothing to protect the welfare of those animals. The Minister told us that this review would be based on the science and the evidence. It is not. He said that the review would not be based on economics, but it is. The science is clear. The AVA, the Australian Veterinary Association, the RSPCA, and the available scientific evidence have made it clear that May to October, the high-risk period for live sheep exports, has to be avoided if we are going to prevent the type of incident that we saw on the Awassi Express. These incidents have happened year on year for decades. Thousands of sheep dying every year on a single voyage during this period. If we continue to allow those exports to happen, then we have gone against what the Australian public's expectations are.
Dr. Bitter Jones from the RSPCA, 25 past 12 on text. John in Muckunbuddin says, is Alana the Minister for Animals Australia or the Minister for Agriculture? John's comments coming today after the minister has said that she may call on state animal welfare laws into the future to pause or suspend the trade if her department is concerned about the welfare of sheep going into this region during the Northern Hemisphere summer months. Well, Bindi Murray is a sheep producer from Woodnilling, and they're on that property running about 15,000 sheep. She's also the director of Sheep Producers Australia. How should WA sheep producers respond to the McCarthy review today, Bindi?
I think one of the things that I really see, and I can see in what I do on farm as well, is a change in terms of how we measure the trade, how we regulate the trade. It's about actually looking at what are the really important things and how do we deliver on that. So mortality is a really blunt instrument, whereas if we move towards a welfare-based model that's looking at those indicators, so it actually means that we can adapt and we can put the right things in for the right circumstances, because as all sheep producers will know, that's what, you know, the welfare of livestock is about. It's about responding appropriately to the environment and all of the risks and so on that are going on. So the shift in principle towards a system that's more based around that is a principle that I think is really great for the industry going forward.
So this gives sheep producers confidence, do you think? Confidence in the industry, the live export industry going forward?
Absolutely, because the technical detail that's in the report gives producers confidence, because, you know, I know from me personally, my technical skill set is around on-farm. And so it's very, you know, we want to be engaged, we want to be informed. And we want to try and make these positive changes together. So to get, you know, independent, evidence-based review and recommendations on what's possible and how we can move forward, yeah, is really, really valuable.
How do you step away from this review and what's been going on over the last few weeks, the discussion, the debate about the future of the live export trade, when the pressure is really on over that period of time? But it continues too, because today the animal welfare groups aren't happy. They don't feel that this review has gone far enough and the recommendations in it. And the State Agriculture Minister, Alana McTiernan, has just put out her response to the McCarthy review. And in it, she's saying that, you know, the science is telling us that it may not be possible to guarantee decent animal welfare outcomes on ships during the high heat and humidity of the Middle Eastern summer. So she also not feeling that this has gone far enough. So that pressure going to be there for the industry well into the future.
And look, the industry has always been improving, and it needs to continue to improve. This is some really good principles. We still need some science and some more technical information as to how to make this work. So that's part of the process, is that we will have to, you know, we'll have to make this work. That's really the way that I see it. This report isn't anything like, you know, a business as usual. This is the start of making some really fundamental changes to our industry. And that's what we need to work on now, is how we actually do that, how we look after, you know, ensure the welfare of animals that are in the industry, and how we also make sure we've still got a viable industry so that we can reinvest, so that we can keep improving, you know, so that we have new technology, new ships, new investment coming in to allow us to keep that improvement happening.
Why is this the start of the journey, Bindi Murray? Shouldn't that have been way back when the trouble started for the cattle exports into Indonesia, which you were a part of, and you were there on social media putting out the, you know, showing people around your farm, your property, about what goes on real modern farms today? Why wasn't that a wake-up call then, and these sort of changes made then for the sheep exports?
Changes have been made. Research has been going on. And maybe that's something that we haven't explained clearly, and we will do. But this is not a stagnant industry. It's not business as usual. The thing that this gives us, because I think one of the things that is a fundamental change, is we need to stop looking at ourselves as a component of a supply chain, because we need to look at welfare across the supply chain, and we need to set up culture, we need to set up relationships, we need to set up processes that make sure that we are taking that view right across it. So that is, we have done a lot of technical improvements. It's a huge leap forward to have this call for, this, you know, support to actually go out and achieve cultural change and to achieve a change in the way that the basis of the industry. So it's a starting point, but it doesn't mean that nothing has been happening up to now.
How happy are you as a sheep producer and many other sheep producers across Western Australia have sort of been there putting forward the positive part of the industry, saying, look at what we do on our farms and in the transport of livestock from the farm to the sale yard or to other parts around the state, when really the trouble has been on board the ships at that end, at the exporters' end. So how happy have you been to sort of argue the case continually when that's where it's been falling over?
The way that I look at it is, you know, I've got young children, and when something goes wrong, the first thing I hear is, he started it, he's to blame, or something like that. What I want to focus on is how we fix it, because welfare is an issue in this context. Welfare is an issue in terms of that incident and that footage, but welfare is an issue that we all need to be addressing all the time. So that's why I'm really looking at what we do going forward and how we work together, because, you know, our industry is an industry that works with animals, and we need to make sure that we're doing that well, and also that we're explaining well to the wider public how we do it and why we do it. So I think that conversation that we as animal industries need to have with the public, that's going to be really influenced by this review and by the cultural change that we're looking for.
How concerned are you? Because we're right in that period now. This is the Northern Hemisphere summer, and the shipments to this region continue, a recent one from Fremantle, in fact. How are you feeling as we kind of get into this part of the year where these really hot, humid conditions occur in the Middle East and with these shipments going? I mean, at this point, we really can't afford for anything to go wrong. Is that how you see it?
It's not just in terms of the context, just in general. We need to get this right. We need to get our industry right. So that's the challenge that's in front of us.
Bindi Murray, good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Bindi Murray, sheep producer from Woodnilling and also a director of Sheep Producers Australia. ABC WA, this is The Country Hour. Michaela Carr in the studio with the news headlines.
Thanks, Belinda. The National Farmers Federation has welcomed federal government changes to the live sheep export industry. Sheep numbers on vessels will be reduced by almost 30%. There'll be greater penalties for breaches, and independent inspectors will travel on all ships. The federal government says it will work to improve the candidate nomination process to avoid further High Court challenges to politicians. A bipartisan parliamentary committee has recommended a referendum to scrap the list of disqualifying factors for politicians after the dual citizenship fiasco. The unemployment rate has risen to 5.6% despite 22,000 jobs being added in April. The participation rate increased to 65.6% as more people were employed and those also started to look for a job. And an American man has died when an e-cigarette blew up and launched projectiles into his skull. A post-mortem report has found that the 38-year-old also suffered burns to more than 80% of his body in a fire caused by the exploding vape pen. So, unfortunately, it looks like giving up smoking might also be as hazardous as smoking itself. Goodness gracious.
Michaela, thank you for that. A full bulletin coming your way at 1 o'clock today, 27 to 1.
You're with Belinda Varaschetti on The Country Hour on ABC Local Radio WA.
Great to have you along this afternoon. And still to come, a lot of concern about citrus canker for citrus growers, so that's grapefruit, oranges, limes, lemons in this state. It has been detected in the Northern Territory and concerned today that it may have jumped the border. The latest on that story for you coming between now and the news at 1 o'clock. Also, just before the news at one, it is a Thursday. That means the Mount Barker cattle market is on, so we'll get the details on the yarding and the prices for you just before the news at one. Off to the Weather Bureau now, and Adam Conroy with you this afternoon. Adam, it's pretty much a repeat situation of what we've been talking about over the last few days, unless there's something else to enlighten us with this afternoon.
There's not much certainly to talk about in the next 4 days. That high just continues to sit in the bite, directing easterly winds across most of the southwest land division. Pretty much sunny through most parts for the next 4 days. The only weather we might see creep into the southwest land division is just on Saturday morning. There could be a bit of light shower activity just on coastal parts east of Esperance as a very weak front brushes through. But certainly nothing of significance in that. Looks like this pattern will probably hold until later next week at this stage. There is hints of a cold front that may get to us later on Thursday. So fingers crossed that keeps showing up in the models and that would finally provide a break to this dry weather. But certainly at this range, I'd be holding off getting too excited until we see it get a bit closer.
Can you give us any more details on how it's looking at the moment? And I know it's a little way off yet, but any more details on that front, Adam?
Well, it's really relying on the high pressure system moving to the east. So at this stage, it's one of those very standing up kind of fronts where you tend to get the heaviest rainfall on the west coast, and it does weaken as it goes inland. But it does have the potential for some double figure falls near the west coast if it holds together. Normally when you get this first front pushing up after such a dry spell, they do tend to weaken quickly as it goes inland. Hopefully it does at least break the run of highs and brings us into some westerlies for a bit. I wouldn't be game to say much more than that at this range.
All right then. So that pretty much wraps us up for the northern, eastern and the southwest land division.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, up north, certainly continuing as normal, and these windy conditions as well that we've been having in the mornings up north should persist for at least the next 4 days as well up there.
Just one, and this is the only thing that sort of popped up on the rainfall readings in the last 24 hours to 9 o'clock this morning. Narrambeen with 9 millimetres, is that right or that's a typo?
No, that wouldn't be right. I think someone else talked about that this morning, so I'm sure quality control will be striking that one out of the records.
All right, we'll just put a line through that then. Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
And warnings, anything to talk about?
So there is a strong wind warning up north. Pretty much the entire Kimberley and Pilbara coast is expecting strong winds for this morning and again for tomorrow morning. There is also a fire weather warning just for the west Pilbara coast.
Adam, thank you so much for the details. ABC WA, it's 23-1.
Have your say on the Country Hour. SMS the program on 0448 922 604.
And a few of you are keen to have your say on the live animal export industry, particularly focusing today on sheep exports to the Middle East during the Northern Hemisphere summer and getting a lot of responses from different stakeholders for basically the last half hour or so. This through from Marie. The review hasn't gone far enough. Vets have stated emphatically that exporting animals in the Northern Hemisphere summer will continue to cause suffering. It's time to listen to the experts. I applaud Alana McTiernan for her strong animal welfare stance, says Marie. Matt says, I wonder how many cockies would sit on one of these ships in a cage for 3 weeks or let their dog do it. None at all. McTiernan is right. Either the industry gets cleaned up or public pressure will shut it down. And Andrew says, the head of the RSPCA has blinkers on. Can't she see that if they ban Australian live exporters, who are the best in the world, the void will be filled by substandard exporters and animal welfare will go down? Thanks for that, Andrew. 0448 922 604. 21-1. Well, when the ABC broke the news yesterday that there wouldn't be a suspension of the trade, a ban during this northern summer months, and as soon as we heard that story, we put a link to an article on the WA Country Hour Facebook page. And as always, it attracted lots of comments, including one from Chloe McDougall, who's an agronomist living in Dumbleyung, which is about 270 kilometres southeast of Perth. And she was responding to this comment from Graham. He posted this comment which said, so the greedy farmers get fatter. Now, Chloe, instead of me reading out your comment, I wondered if you could just read out your response to Graham on Facebook.
Yeah, sure. How are you going, Belinda?
Great.
My response to Graham was, have you ever studied the cash flow of mixed farming enterprises? Unlike the usual 9-to-5 salary, which goes in weekly or monthly, a mixed farming enterprise rarely sees profit and cash in hand. It is moved into next year's inputs. What is frustrating is that farmers are working the most physically and mentally demanding job in this country, and we are feeding people as ignorant as you, who would rather abuse and not support farmers. You are damaging the image of agriculture with uneducated and completely ill-informed comments like yours. Get out of your comfort zone and visit a farmer. Even ask to see the budget and the lack of dollars actually free at hand to flow into what you call greed. Maybe you should thank farmers for the freedom of eating food in a country such as Australia. Or better yet, if you don't want to, become self-sufficient. Farmers don't want to put food on the table of ignorant people like you.
Now, Chloe, your comment attracted 64 likes, which is quite impressive. Why do you think it struck such a chord?
I think that's just exactly that, Belinda. I think when we go into a powerful platform like social media, there's just continual comments from, you know, activist views and people that are probably really uneducated or inexperienced in an area, and one in particular is Agriculture and Industries Associated. And I guess the response to my comment was it's just giving farmers and the agriculture industry, and in particular around the response to live export, a voice. So all these comments that are, you know, false accusations, slamming farmers, derogatory comments, couldn't be any further from the truth. And I go about it just placing, you know, experience and science evidence statements out there, you know, responding to someone who's calling farmers greedy by saying, well, in actual fact, that footage couldn't have hit the heart cords of farmers more, you know, and if anyone's got the right to be frustrated and absolutely shocked, it is farmers themselves.
So when you read something like that, is it sort of poke you? How do you sort of sum up how you feel when you read that?
Yeah, along with farmers, absolutely frustrated, but you know, all this negativity and like slamming of farmers, I think it fires up the passion in me, in the sense that all I want to do is respond not with negativity, but actually paint a picture of what agriculture is and what farming is about, and in particular the hard work and sacrifice that farming families are making. And I think if an activist, real minority view, and this is coming from people that 3 months ago accused, you know, farmers of the cruelty of shearing, you know, completely uneducated on topics. If the wider population is influenced by activist views, I think that's detrimental to agriculture. I reckon we need to step up as an industry, like people like me working in it and farmers as well, and step up and actually give our voice strength and show some facts around our industry.
ABC WA 18 to 1. Belinda Varaschetti with you, and talking to you this afternoon is Chloe McDougall. She's an agronomist living in Dumbleyung and quite active on social media on the WA Country Hour Facebook page yesterday on the subject of live exports. And Chloe, you're mainly involved in cropping now. Why are you sticking your head up this time round on this live export issue?
I actually studied animal science originally at uni before doing a diploma in agronomy. But I guess that's exactly it. I'm coming from a background where I've studied animal science and production, and I actually know, other than these keyboard advocates, that animal welfare is a key point of animal production in Australia. Farmers wouldn't produce anything, meat, wool, whatever it is, to market if welfare wasn't absolutely crucial in their production. So for, you know, sledges on social media to suggest otherwise, it's completely incorrect, and I feel I've almost got a responsibility as someone that has studied and, you know, has grown up in a farming environment to really put facts out there and correct people on their, you know, false accusations.
And so what kind of reaction do you get from friends or work colleagues about your activity on social media?
Yeah, it has become quite a talking point. A lot of my clients do call me a keyboard warrior, and I don't know if that's a great thing at times, but, you know, if I can change one view or educate one person that was otherwise going to abuse a farmer or have a, you know, informed, you know, judgment of this industry, I think I've done something. And I think, you know, I would encourage farmers, people involved in the industry, to follow suit. I think the more of a stronger voice we get, the less of a dictation on social media activists have. And, you know, the wider population, that includes decision makers, that includes politicians. So we need to show how positive and how, you know, advancing technology and reacting to people's, you know, emotions in today's world that agriculture is and we're prepared to be.
Earlier this week, I caught up with the agronomist Simon Teakle, who was saying that farmers maybe should get off social media when they're waiting for rain in particular, because he was saying, you know, comparing what's going on, you know, with your crop compared to a crop that could be hundreds of kilometres away, and he thinks it really adds to their stress levels. Do you think farmers should hop off social media?
Yeah, I agree with Simon in a way. It's definitely not a positive thing to dwell on lack of rain and the stress of them at the moment. But I think on the flip side of that, pretty important at the moment for the majority of Australians, lambing farmers, to actually understand how hard it is, how tough it is. I mean, if they wanted to come out and, you know, trail feed sheep every single day and, you know, constant worry and stress and the physically demanding job that farming is, you know, I'd encourage them to. But I think the social media platform, love it or hate it, it's there to stay, and it's a massive tool that global businesses use for information. And if we're going to be ignorant and step back and not be involved with these discussions and defend our, you know, industry and how proactive we are, I think that would be a step backwards. I think, you know, we as farmers, as people involved in industry, owe it to ourselves to get on there and just say, we're not going to abuse you, but here are the facts. This is what we are doing.
Chloe, a couple of pats on the back for you. One on text saying, well said, young lady. And another from Jeff saying, Chloe for Premier. Well done. Farmers had a gutful of people putting us down. That's from Jeff. But then there's this. Give me a break, lady. The poor old farmer with three Land Cruisers, a house in Perth and a holiday home in Perth, from Matt. What do you say to that?
Yeah, again, just frustrating because it's probably coming from someone. I guess it's a little bit of a jealous tone. They don't understand just what it is to be involved with the farming business. But like, rather than make that, you know, frustrate me even further, I would say to that person, can you just applaud the work that farmers are doing? You know, there's never been such a food shortage in the world. The global population is growing. Farmers are doing a job that is absolutely fundamental to life. They are putting food on a table. And if you can't walk into a grocery store and appreciate how that food gets there, I think you're lacking a little bit of understanding of the world. It sort of fuels me more to keep doing it, I suppose.
Chloe, good to talk to you. Thanks for your time today here on ABC's Country Hour. That's Chloe McDougall. Some of her clients call her a keyboard warrior. Her day job is an agronomist and she lives in Dumbleyung, and whenever she sees some comments about, in particular on this occasion, the live animal export trade and having a go at farmers, she gets onto her keyboard and puts out the other side of the story. ABC WA 13 to 1. This through from Alex in Nawangarup called through to say, how many sheep died on the last live X voyage to the Northern Hemisphere? Well, that was the sheep on board the El Masila, and that arrived in Kuwait. This is the 14th of May. It had 65,344 sheep on it, and the mortality rate was 0.25%. So a total loss of 164 stock losses. So 0.25% is the answer to that question. Alex goes on to say, and on some WA farms that have 65,000 sheep, how many would have died in the same time frame? He says one mistake is one too many, but please look at the whole industry in context. 12 minutes to one.
The Country Hour with Belinda Varaschetti on ABC Local Radio WA.
News for you at 1 o'clock. Before the news, off to the markets. Today it is the Mount Barker cattle market, so getting the results of the yarding and the prices with Tracy Kilner just before one. Western Australian fruit growers are really concerned about citrus canker and concerned that it might now be in Western Australia. This is the disease that wiped out millions of dollars worth of crops in 2004 in Queensland's Emerald region. Now, yesterday, I told you that authorities have confirmed that citrus canker has been found on 6 Northern Territory properties, 1 production nursery, 2 retail outlets, and also in 3 backyards. Courtney Fowler's our rural reporter based in Kununurra. Courtney, why do some WA citrus growers think the disease may have already made its way into Western Australia?
Well, WA's Department of Primary Industries and Regional Development has already confirmed that a small number of citrus nursery plants have made their way across the border into WA from Darwin. What we do know is that DPIRT officers have been doing surveillance and testing in WA in the areas where those plants have ended up. The department cannot yet confirm if citrus cankers is definitely in WA or where those plants from across the border may have been seized. A spokesperson has told us they will be able to make some announcements tomorrow, but after chatting to some citrus growers around the north of WA, they are nervous at the moment. After all, it is a contagious disease caused by a bacteria that can affect all citrus plants. It can affect the leaf stems and also the fruit. Of course, it is a great concern to the WA citrus industry. There are a number of grapefruit and lime growers in the Kimberley and Gascoyne, and of course, a lot of orange growers down in the southern growing regions. Growers' main concern is it's not known how long these plants from the NT may have circulated in WA before being discovered and destroyed, or even how any plants from across the border may have got through the quarantine checkpoint. I'm of the understanding, though, that some growers in the north do get their plant material from the NT, which is now banned for now from any interstate citrus trade. So that could have further implications for them as well.
That is the ABC's rural reporter, Courtney Fowler, based in Kununurra in Western Australia's Kimberley, and just outlining some of the concerns that some WA fruit growers have about citrus canker, which is now been confirmed on 6 Northern Territory properties, but the concern is that it's now in Western Australia. And in some news just a hand, Richard Hudson is in the studio. Any developments, Richard?
Yeah, there are. The news has moved pretty quickly on this particular story. The Department of Primary Industries and Regional Development has now confirmed the detection of citrus canker on 2 properties in Kununurra and Wyndham. So the disease is now in WA. They're saying it has been linked to the imported plants from the Northern Territory that Courtney was just referring to. The DPIRD can also say that the infected plants and other at-risk citrus plants on the properties have now been removed. They've been destroyed to minimise the risk of the disease spreading. The department's going to have a chat to us about this in more detail on tomorrow's Country Hour. And they're also saying they have contacted those in the industry, those known to have received plants, and it's implementing measures to manage the risks. And that includes sampling and destruction of trace citrus plants that have been identified. So just confirming the news today, just to hand, is that DPIRD, the Department of Primary Industries and Regional Development, can confirm WA now has the devastating or contagious bacteria disease called citrus canker.
Richard, thank you for those details. 8 to 1 here on ABC WA, and as Richard mentioned, the plan at this stage to talk to the Department of Primary Industries on the program tomorrow and get the very latest on that situation from the head of biosecurity within the department. 8 to 1, the market's not far away. That's the livestock markets, but looking at different markets right now, because 6 years, that's how long world grain stocks have been going up. That is, until this past week. In its latest World Agricultural Supply and Demand Report, or WASDE as it's known, the United States Department of Agriculture announced world wheat, barley and corn stocks have all decreased for the first time since 2012. Grain marketing analyst May Connolly says basic supply and demand means this is good news for Australian grain growers and prices come this harvest.
Finally, the big heavy ship that's been going in one direction for 6 years has finally started to turn. So, yeah, definitely a step in the right direction. For the first time in 6 years, we're actually seeing a drop in stock. So looking at the charts, there's just been a steady upward movement since 2012. But, yeah, finally, just due to some weather and low prices, finally we're seeing drop in stocks for this coming season.
I can't believe it. As you say, six years we've been waiting for something fundamental to happen in the market like this.
After a very kind of volatile decade before that, it has been a very slow and steady 6 years waiting for this. I guess importantly, it is very early in the year. So if there is good weather around the world, then the stocks could rebuild. And here's hoping that good weather hits Australia and our stocks are better than expected because we've had good rain.
We'll cross our fingers for that. Having a look at those stocks, I mean, has it been much of a movement down?
So the absolute big one and the big surprise to the market was actually corn. So global corn stocks are down a whopping 36 million tonnes from last year. So we've seen the effect of this really strong demand for feed grain, especially from China, in our barley prices. So feed barley prices for 17, 18, 18, 19 and 19, 20 now all at decile 9 levels. And that has been because of this enormous demand for feed grain around the world. And so that, the net effect of that has been a 36 million tonne crop in world corn stocks. And also barley, we're now looking at the lowest world barley stocks in 35 years this year at just over 17 million tonnes. So on the feed growing side of things, all very positive for prices. Probably just the one thing to be cautious of, a lot of that demand that I spoke about is from one country, and that's China. So if anything stops China buying, the fun could be over.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned that we have already seen a bit of an influence on our prices here at home when it comes to barley, but we also saw overseas, looking at both the Chicago Board of Trade prices as well as the prices out of Kansas for canola and wheat. They've both jumped as well. Has that trickled back to us here in Australia?
Canola, frustratingly, no. So the 5-year average price for canola is $5.50, and 18-19 canola prices are only around that level. So it's just an average canola price at the moment. So given weather conditions in Australia, it's dry in Canada. At the moment, the USDA is forecasting an extra million tonnes of canola around the world this year compared to last year. I think they're dreaming at the moment. But yeah, wheat, we've certainly seen some really good wheat prices, again, for all three active seasons, 17-18, 18-19 and 19-20. So first drop in global stocks to wait for 6 years. Look, to put things into perspective, it is only a 6 million tonne drop in stocks. The stocks level is still going to be the second biggest on record, but at least it's a step in the first direction. But yeah, at the end of the day, we've still got 264 million tonnes of wheat stocks. And if we think back to the really high price years, stocks are closer to kind of the 200 million tonne mark. So a 6 million tonne drop in stocks is nice, but we really need a 60 million tonne drop to really make a difference. And obviously, we don't want that to come out of Australia.
Grain marketing consultant Mae Connolly from Farmenco, and she was catching up there with the ABC's Tara de Landgraaf. 3 minutes to 1. About 1,500 head of cattle were at last week's Mount Barker sale. Tracy Kilner, how many today?
Hi, Belinda. We had a total yarding of 1,594 mixed quality cattle. The yarding was dominated by young cattle, with well-bred cattle in demand, while lightweight plain types were harder to sell. The lightweight steers sold to a top of 336 cents, with price fluctuations only dependent on quality. The prime cows eased 3 cents this week, with a top price of 224 cents, while store cows lifted, selling to a top of 187 cents a kilo. The bullocks over 750 kilos sold for 196 to 234 cents to average 209 cents a kilo. Grown steers weighing 500 to 600 kilos made from 250 to 256 cents a kilo. Heavy yearling steers made from 278 to 286 cents. Medium weight sold for 294 to 310. And the lightweight yearling steers sold from 290 to 308 cents a kilo. Yearling heifers eased, making from 160 to 276 cents, averaging 250 cents a kilo. Heavy prime cows eased 3 cents, selling from 180 to 224 cents. Medium weights made from 180 to 208 cents. And store cows sold for 135 cents for light plain cows, up to 187 cents for better quality stores. Prime heavy bulls gained 20 cents, selling for 180 to 210 cents. Medium weights made from 158 to 186 cents, dependent on quality, while the lightweight bulls sold to live export for 238 to 298 cents a kilo. This has been Tracy Kilner for Meat and Livestock Australia's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Tracy, thank you for those details. And that is the livestock markets for this week. Tomorrow, checking in with Danny Burkett and going through the wool market. Did I hear somewhere it hit 1,900 cents? I think that was the Eastern Market Indicator. So going off the conversation we had last Friday, talking about what an incredible rise in the wool market at the moment, and it continues by the sounds of it this week. Danny Burkett will wrap it all up for you neatly tomorrow. A few texts to get through just before the news at 1 o'clock. This one, I haven't heard anyone blame farmers. The issue is the sheep dying at sea. Anyone would think the farmers are getting their throats cut. Wool and sheep prices are the highest they have ever been. I don't know if the blame's being pointed at the farmers, but there's certainly not a lot of sympathy from some comments anyway on the WA Country Hour Facebook page whenever you put up a live export post. This through from Matt, who texted earlier, duelling with Chloe from Dumbleyung, who we spoke to. I do come from a farm, Chloe. I just have a wide enough perspective to realise that we get plenty of benefits others don't, and if we don't buck up our ideas and stop bitching about how tough we have it, people will tune out. Thank you for that, Matt. Great to catch up with you. Time now for ABC News. It's 1 o'clock.